Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast, brought to you by Wandering One Studios and yours truly, your host, Link Flores. Hope you guys are having a wonderful week wherever you are. Whenever you hear this, thank you for tuning in and listening to this podcast. I appreciate you. And for those of you who've been listening for a long time, I appreciate you as well. Make sure that if you get a chance, like, share, subscribe, comment, all that jazz. You know how it goes. But yeah, the best thing you can do, honestly, is to tune in, let it run in the background, and then let a friend know about it. Those are the two best things you can do. Outside of that, if you feel like you have a little bit of extra coin burning your pocket, let's say somewhere in the neighborhood of $3, you can also stop on over to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. Links are in the description. And for there, you could just support the podcast for $3 a month. I want to do extra content. I'm trying to figure out what to do, and I really want your help. So please, 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 please go over there, email me, let me comments, questions, advice requests. You know, you need a little bit of advice, suggestions, whatever. Just go ahead and hit me up over there. I would love to read your emails. And like I said, unless you ask me to, I won't read your name. But yeah, it'd be great to have some content from the users who support the podcast. So please do that. Also, I stream on Twitch about 4 or 5 days. Well, actually, it's more like 4 days a week when I have the brain power and the, you know, energy to do so. So you can catch me over there at twitch.tv/linkib. That's LINKIBE. Doing a lot of role-playing games lately. The odd first-person shooter, puzzle game, platformer, you know, that kind of thing. Try to switch it up every now and again to keep it fresh and to keep me from getting bored with it. So hopefully it'll keep you from getting bored with it and we can have fun together. And I'll be streaming there when this podcast comes out. It will be, probably about 2 p.m. by the time this actually hits the airwaves on the 28th of August, 2024. So somewhere between hopefully 1 o'clock and 3 p.m. Eastern Standard, I'll be on. Ordinarily, my time's about 3 to 4. I wanted to get a little early in today. So I could take some time out and watch the amazing Preacher, which I've been watching formerly on AMC, now on Netflix. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in just a moment. Just so you know, I'm going to try to avoid as many spoilers as possible, but I'll leave you the timestamp in the description of the episode so you know when to skip ahead so you don't miss anything or hear something you don't want to hear. How's your week going? My week has been insane. I've had some weird occurrences this week. You know, that's the best way to put it. However, before we get into like the fun and games and stuff, we're going to get a couple little topics out of the way. Just some random thoughts have been kind of bouncing around in my skull. And I'm hoping you guys will take a walk with me here. And granted, I don't expect anybody to agree 100% with 100% of the things I say 100% of the time. But I think that there's like maybe some wiggle room here if you'll walk with me for a moment. There's this phenomenon that I've noticed for a long time, actually. And I don't know really. Well, one, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about it. But I don't know what drives it in people. I mean, I guess I kind of understand what drives it. All right, let me just go ahead and say what I'm talking about. There's this trend that I've noticed, and I don't know if it's become more prevalent with the proliferation of social media or not, because I don't seem to recall seeing it as much before the emergence of things like, you know, obviously back in the day it was MySpace or Friendster, but I mean now with like Facebook and TikTok and Twitter, you just, whatever social media platform you're on, even if Reddit, Instagram, whatever. And it's this thing that I think probably happened, but people probably kept it more under wraps, or maybe they just were, maybe they didn't have a, I don't know what it was, the proper venue, I guess, to vent what their feelings were on the subject. And that is celebrating the birthdays of people who've been dead for any amount of time, really. But just, I think it's a little peculiar personally when you see somebody's like, oh, you've been dead for 25 years. I'm like, bro, okay. We need to find a healthier way to cope with this. You know what I mean? Instead of posting it on Facebook and whatnot And I, you know, I get here's where I'm going to lose some of you guys, but I've walked with me and I think maybe you'll kind of get at least where I'm coming from and understand that I'm not coming from a place of hate or anything like that. I just really, one, don't have any frame of reference for this. And two, I don't understand the behavior. So I'm asking this or putting this out there in an attempt to understand, not as an attempt to really shit on anybody. I am perfectly capable of understanding that everybody processes their grief in their own unique ways. Some people, you know, cry, some people scream, some people rage, some people paint, some people bake, some people, you know, take over an entire village. I don't know, whatever it is, however you express your grief is your thing, right? For me, it's one thing to memorialize someone and to remember like the date of their passing or their birthday after they've been gone, maybe even a wedding anniversary, something like that. But I've noticed this one thing, and I don't think it necessarily revolves so much around particularly a birthday or in like a memorialized event. I think my issue is not that people are like, hey, for example, I know someone that I didn't know personally very well at all. Like we'd met in passing because we went to the same school and we knew of each other, but we were never really close. But he always seemed like a very genuine and sincere person. He passed away about 2 years ago. And recently his birthday came by and popped up in my Facebook feed. And I've seen this happen at least 3 times over the past month, over the month of August, where somebody who's passed away had a birthday in August and people are like, happy heavenly birthday, blah, blah, blah. It's I miss you every day. And I'm like, on the one hand, it's one thing. And then again, like I said, I don't have a window into these people's lives, so I don't fucking know. And I'm just kind of looking at it from my own personal way of reacting to it from someone that I was maybe not as close to, but who had passed away. And I was like, man, that sucks. You know what I mean? That's terrible. That's awful that you're feeling that you're going through that and whatever. But at a certain point, it sometimes feels performative. I'm not going to lie. Because it's not like that's the only person I've ever known that died. You know what I mean? And I've had a couple of, people that were close to me when I was in high school. I've had at least 2 ex-girlfriends pass away from different, ailments that they were suffering from. And I knew about, when we met, and I still see their birthdays pop up every now and again, because, you know, whoever was managing their estate didn't bother to take down their Facebook page or something like that. Or we had been together or known each other long enough that I remember when their birthday comes around, I go like, yeah, this would be the time. Or here's how good Facebook is. They'll pop up with that. I'm like, hey, this is when I was celebrating so-and-so's birthday. Oh, that's right. They passed away like 7 years ago. And I still, you know, experience the emotion of, man, that was somebody I knew and I loved and cared about and they passed away. And man, it'd be dope to be able to celebrate another birthday with them. But I'm going to fall just short of posting like happy heavenly birthday. Cause like I said, in a way, I guess it's just me and the way I was brought up, maybe just the way my brain chemistry is structured. It feels performative. That's like when you post up for your 2-year-old son's birthday. Happy birthday. You're the best thing that ever happened to me. That kid can't read that shit. Who is that for? You're not helping the kid. You know what I mean? It's not like you can get extra birthday presents or any shit like that. So in a way, it feels like it's just super performative. And I know that that's a big part of social media. So I'm not immune to that. I've been caught up in that before. I'm not unaware that that's a thing that happens, is that people put on their best Sunday best, basically, to go on social media and just like, this is my life, you know? And then you got some people who go so far in the other direction and they're intentionally crying into the camera. I'm like, all right, that's a lot. And that's also kind of weird. I guess the best way I can put it is there's a verse that I remember from the Bible that kind of paraphrasing here that a heart knows its own grief and no one else can share in its joy. And maybe that's why I feel like when I see stuff like that, I'm like, yo, man, some things you should keep to yourself. You know what I mean? like I like I said, I've had a couple of girlfriends that have passed away over the years, one of whom I didn't even know had died, and then I found out about like months later. I'm like, oh, should we split? And she went on her, we went our separate ways. And it wasn't until like, I think maybe like 6 months after she had passed, I was just like, she just floated off into the ether and I never heard from her again. And I'm just like, what the fuck happened there? And I was trying to get a hold of her and I called, and then I think it was one of her, I think it was one of her kids, who's like a teenager at the time, wrote me and was like, yeah, she died. And I'm like, what the fuck? They're like, yeah, she died like 6, 7 months ago. And I was like, why didn't nobody tell me? Why didn't she say anything? You know what I mean? I knew we weren't dating anymore, but we didn't leave on bad terms. It just, we're like, hey, this didn't work out. But I was just like, man. But then I'd see her birthday pop up every now and again. I'd be like, oh yeah, that's right. She would have been such and such age today. But I'm not gonna sit there and be like, you know, throw an effusive Facebook post up about the shit. I don't, and you know what? Maybe it's something broken in me. I don't know. And I can't say that it isn't. But for some reason, it just, and especially when you go to someone's page and you feel, see this wall of, oh my God, happy birthday. I missed you so much. And then you're like, yeah. On the one hand, I get that that could be the case. But I remember when dude was alive, y'all weren't saying none of this shit to him then. You know what I mean? Because I would interact with the cat, you know? And I'd see the stuff that he was posting. I would actually chit chat with him over Facebook because we didn't live anywhere near one another. And I'm like, I see the engagement that he gets when he puts shit up on social media and he's trying to talk about some shit that's important to him. And everybody just kind of goes, yeah, thumbs up, and then walks the fuck away. And there's like six people reacted to it. But when his birthday comes around and he's dead, there are like 45 fucking people on his wall within the first hour of them waking up. They're like, happy birthday. I love you. I miss you. I'm like, where the fuck were you guys when he was alive? And I think maybe that's what irritates me about it, is how some people will just they'll stomp and clear stomp and cheer and, you know, clap their hands and wave a flag for you after you're dead, but they won't do shit for you while you're alive and breathing, sitting right here in front of them. And I've had that happen to me recently. I mean, not to that extreme of an extent. But I think it was part of the whole thing with podcasting too, is I told my friends when I started doing this, there's a group of people I've hung out with for years, just from all over the country, you know, whatever. Like whenever we get a chance to hang out, chit chat, whatever, we talk, whatever, and we get to see each other, we do that. And I'm like, all you got to do is just once a week go to this thing, push a button, and let it play in the background. You don't even have to put it on. You don't have to put the volume on. Just put it on silent and just let it run in the background. And I know they don't even do that. And the reason I know is because there's probably over like a dozen or so of them, and each of these podcasts ends up getting less than four listens. And I know at least one of them is me. And maybe like two are people that I know that are super close to me. So I know that the vast majority of people I know I do a podcast and have been doing one for now, at this point, almost a year, have never even bothered to really turn this thing on. Excuse me, I needed some coffee real quick to kind of even me out a little bit. But yeah, so like I see that, and I think maybe it makes you start to consider like, what is your legacy really? And who's really on your team? And I think maybe that's what disturbs me, because I see some of these people who have like, you know, 60, 70 people pop up on the day of their birth. You know, it's basically like commemorating the anniversary of their death in a way. And they're like, oh, I miss you. I love you. I think of you all the time. And you're like, you ain't thought about this motherfucker ever. Let's just be real. And I wouldn't want you to do that to me. I'm telling you right now, like, as the day I die, I want my Facebook and all that social media just to get evaporated. I will have the executor of my estate hand over. I'll have all my passwords and everything to them. And I'm like, as soon as I die, the second I am pronounced dead, I want you to nuke every social media account that I have. Nuke it to the ground. I don't even want people to put it, I don't even want like an actual, like real obituary. I just want like a one sentence, my name, the day I died. That's it. Like, there he is. He's gone. That's it. I don't want to. Whole bunch of fanfare, any bullshit, because I know it'd be people who'd be weeping and wailing and shit to try to look good. I'm like, I'm not gonna let you shine on that. You know what I mean? The people who know me closest and know me best, fine. I'm down for that. But I don't want just random ass people who barely gave a shit about me while I was alive and kicking to be like, oh, I need you. Oh, I missed you so much. Come on, man. Get the fuck out of my face with that shit. I think that's what really irritates me about it. It's like I'll see people who couldn't give a damn about these folks while they're alive just kind of latch on to this one day because an algorithm sent a message to them, let them know, hey, it's so-and-so's birthday was today. Remember them? They died like 3 years ago. Oh, yeah, that's right. Let me put my social media makeup on and then go out there. And, whoa! It's like hiring professional whalers for your fucking service, man. I'm not for it. But then again, I'm a different kind of dude. So I'm an older guy. So maybe I'm wrong. Like I said, I could be wrong. And this shit might age like milk when it comes out. I mean, it might be bad when it hits and it might be worse a couple years from now. It'd probably be horrifying when I'm dead. But yeah, it's just one of those things where I'm just like, I don't get that. It's weird to me. And a lot of times, and in a wider regard, I guess, the people who I see doing it tend to be the most disingenuous people. And you're like, you don't really care. You know what I mean? You've never were around. You never bothered, you know? And then now you're going to be like, oh, so sad. Man, shut the fuck up. And like I said, this probably will age like milk, which kind of leads me into my next post with my next topic. This is going to be a post at some point. I was recently talking with a friend of mine and we were discussing some of the ideas that you see popping up around, not the ideas, but how do I put it? There's this phenomenon where social media influencers, celebrities and whatnot will get in trouble for shit that they said like decades ago. We've seen it multiple times just in like the last year or two. But I think the most popular example would probably be Kevin Hart and how he lost his job hosting the Oscars because of some homophobic tweets that he put up when he was like a young guy, you know what I mean? Decades ago, he put some shit up on social media and they're like, oh, that's not cool. Fire this man, boo this man and destroy him. I have a huge problem with that. Because it takes away any discussion of how a person can grow and change and modify their behavior. You expect people to exist in a vacuum, but then you also want them to be better than they were back then. You can't have it both ways. Nobody can. Nobody is capable of doing that at all. And here's a real truth. What's it? I'm trying to remember where I read this from. It was a science journal that I was reading because I was trying to find the veracity of the statement. And it said that like every 7 years, all the cells in your body have been completely replaced by new cells. So technically speaking, every 7 years, you're a completely new you. You expect me, even though the entire cellular makeup of my body has changed over the last 7 years, you want me to still be held accountable for and be raked over the coals because of some shit that I said when I was 14, 15, 16, when I was 21, 22, 23? Fuck you. No, I'm not going to do that. And I think it was cool that Kevin Hart said, you know, I mean, I said that shit back then. It wasn't cool. And I regret saying it. You know what I mean? And then they're like, well, you need to do more. He's like, well, I'm not going to because I can't. He's like, how can I apologize more than I've apologized? What the fuck do you want from me? Blood? Do you literally want me to saw off a hand so you can feel good about yourself? Go fuck yourself. I said, I'm sorry. I'm a different person now. What is more important to you? That you get something to make you feel good or that I become a better person. Pick which one you want. And I think that's one of the things that I was speaking to my friend about. It was just saying like, you know, back in the day, I didn't know better. I said some stuff that would have been like, you know, it would have been the shit that would have gotten me in a lot of trouble right now. You know, and just I'm just making jokes with my friends because this is all I knew. And now, you know, I've gone through some shit. I've gone through some therapy. I've gone through some personal development. And I feel disgusted at the person that I was. And I'm like, you know, that's fair. That's fair. That's a good thing to do, to look back on yourself and have that kind of self-awareness and self-reflection to say, yeah, I was kind of a piece of shit back then, and I don't want to do that or be that anymore, so I'm going to be better. And I think that that's cool. You know what I mean? I think it makes more sense than, you know, just kind of shoveling it under the rug and being like, that never happened. And that's the other thing, too, as what they were saying is, you know, I feel like I should admit that to people when I'm, you know, when I get to know them and stuff like that. So they know that that's a part of my past. And I'm like, like, to an extent, I mean, that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, you could do that. I think that it may hollow out some of your interactions with certain people, which, I mean, this person was totally aware of, right? They were like, yeah, I mean, I know that if I admit, hey, I used to say or do this, then it could change the way somebody that I've just met and started to befriend would think about me. They may choose to no longer associate with me. They may choose to outright hate me for that, you know? And I have to accept that those are the consequences of my actions. And I'm like, you know, on the one hand, I get that. And I do respect the idea of being open and honest about, hey, I did some fucked up shit back in the day. My bad. I'm being better now. Can we work on being better together? You help me be better and be accountable, and I'll continue to do the work that I'm doing. I get that. I don't think you have to announce that shit right away. You know what I mean? I mean, like, I don't know I don't know a good analogy for that, you know? It's just, it's so weird to try to put that, it's so weird, not that concept, it's so weird for me to try to put that concept into words that kind of would reflect it in a way that would make everybody go, ah, yes, universally, I understand what you're saying. You know what I mean? I don't know. I guess the only way to put it would probably be like, you know, if you met somebody, you started to like them, you know what I mean? You were starting to really dig everything about them. And then, you know, they're like, oh, okay, this is cool. And then you're like, just so you know, I have 35 cats at home. You go, whoa, okay, wait, what was that about? You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot. I like cats. I really like cats. 35, 325 might be a good number for me, but 35 might just be the breaking point. You know what I mean? It might even be well past the breaking point. But, you know, I don't need you to volunteer that kind of information the first minute you meet me. You know what I mean? Let me get a chance to get to know you, to get to understand you. And then I go, oh, yeah, when you drop that on me, I can be like, okay, so, yeah, I think this kind of makes sense now. And I can either clock that as, oh, yeah, this is a person who has a, you know, a love and a zest and a zeal for animals and helping them. Or I could be like, oh yeah, this person's insane and is going to feed me to these cats and I don't need to be here anymore. Give me a minute to at least decide how I feel about who you are today in the here and now before you lay some heavy shit like that on me, you know? Because not everybody really deserves that knowledge, because not everybody is going to be good with it. Just look at what happened to Kevin Hart. You know what I mean? One of the most bankable and beloved stars in all of Hollywood. He got, you know, basically eradicated from a particular, you know, a particular job opportunity because of some shit he said when he was in his 20s. Now, if that had just been something that he said, you know, like when you get those, you know, a politician has a photograph of them at a party in blackface. Or a rapper comes out and they have a tape where they're using the N-word, right? They're just saying nigga all over the place. And you're like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that about you, but now it paints you in a different light. If that was something that nobody had ever known about him and it came up like, oh, this is old, you know, an old videotape of Kevin saying this shit. You'd be like, yeah, all right. You know, I mean, I think it's just the immediacy of social media and the fact that everybody can see that shit right away. Maybe that's why it makes such a stink. I don't know, and I don't know the exact dynamics behind how that works, but I know that whatever it was, it torpedoed that man, and it absolutely shouldn't have. And I went back trying to find those posts when I thought about this concept, and I couldn't really find anything about it. And I think maybe what he was probably saying would have been something more along the lines of, you know, again, like my friend was saying, maybe some tasteless jokes, some off-color comments or humor or something like that. I don't think it was anything as like death to queers or some shit like that. That would be some shit like, yeah, you got to do a little bit more explaining than that. you know what I mean, bro? Like something else has got to be going on for me to let that one roll off my back. But You know, I think that, you know, we're all young and stupid until we're not. And I think grace is probably what we should operate from when it comes to dealing with other people and realizing that, you know, we are all imperfect beings and none of us has it all completely figured out. And most of us are going to make some tragic and terrifyingly, you know, impactful mistakes in our time while we're on this rock. So maybe we should just understand that, you know, everything changes, life is dynamic, and maybe you can give people the benefit of the doubt and that they shouldn't have to wear their mistakes as a, you know, scarlet letter on them as they navigate this life. And maybe if you find some shit about them and you find like that some shit that you don't like, maybe you should consider, I don't know, the content of their character, to take a phrase from the, you know, great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Look at the content of their character and who they are now and judge them based on that and go, oh, if he thought like this or she said that and today they are this person, what a long way they must have come. And maybe when, instead of trying to gouge somebody and destroy them for some untoward or unkind or even outright offensive or grotesque thing they may have said or done in the past, maybe we move forward and learn who they are and be like, okay, here's where you are now. What was going on with you back then? And what has made you change? Maybe we look at that instead of going like, kill them, burn them at the stake. Like, you're no better than the people that you complain about at that point, right? That's the way I looked at it. And I'm like, I mean, there's only so far I intend to apologize for my past. And I get that there are times when I've hurt other people. There are times when I've maligned other people. And to those people, I definitely do owe an apology. And if and when I have the opportunity, I will. But one thing I'm not about to do is to make that a part of my life and then also let you eviscerate me for some shit I did when I was stupid and didn't know any better. I'm older, I know better, so I do better, right? So if that's the case, then I need you to do the exact same thing. You can't tell me that I should operate through grace and then not afford any to me. You feel what I'm saying? It just seems weird to operate from that mental space, you know? And I get the idea of being intolerant of intolerance, but that is an active concept. That is not a retroactive concept. When you see a Nazi and you punch him in the face, I'm gonna be like, yeah, that's cool. But you see a guy who has a swastika tattoo on his neck and it's kind of faded because he's getting it removed and you fuck him up, I'm like, wait a minute, hold on now. What about that dude is changing? He's obviously trying to make some changes, getting rid of this shit right here. He knows it's there, but he's a different person right now. He's out with his kids. Oh, look at that. He's actually probably like an uncle. Two of them kids are brown kids. Can't be that much of a Nazi if he's feeding them all cake and ice cream, right? Like, let's see what's going on with these people. Instead of being so goddamn judgmental right off the very first second, and instead of people feeling like they have to constantly keep, you know, the list of their sins stapled to their forehead every time they meet someone, maybe we can start to operate with a little bit of grace and a little bit of patience and understanding. I don't know, like fucking adults. Yeah, so while I was excited for my friend going through this journey, I was also worried and concerned for them because I don't want them to feel like they got to tiptoe around me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be the one who's going to be like, oh, you used to be like that? Well, fuck you too. No, hell no. I'm the last person that should judge anybody for some old shit they did in the past. Now, I can make fun of you about it if you want. If you're cool with that. I could definitely joke on you about it. But to actually judge you and think of you as less of a person for that, you had to do some real wild shit for me to take it to that extreme. And I just don't know anybody who's that just out of pocket with it. I really don't. And I sincerely doubt that I ever would. And if I do, they've either done a real good job of keeping it under wraps or it hasn't been enough of an issue that it's affected our friendship or our relationships. So that's where I'm leaving that one. All right, that was a real heavy way to start out the podcast, right? Yeah. Yeah, let's make sure we start every podcast with something like that. So it could be like, good God, is there going to be any fun in this? Yes, I promise there will be. Speaking of fun, oh buddy, oh boy. Over the last week, Gamescom went off over in Cologne, Germany. And for those of you who are not gamers, you might want to go ahead and start snoozing right now. Because we're going to talk pretty quick about some gaming shit. And yeah, Gamescom is like the European version of what E3 was here in the United States. And it's basically like a large gaming convention where companies from around the world gather together to show off their new wares. Sometimes they drop off demos. There's obviously going to be booths where you can play their games. There's always kinds of events and swag to give away and prizes that they're being handed out. So I was watching some of the footage out of Gamescom, and it's interesting to see, like, as the E3 was like the show, it was the premier thing. Again, this is mainly for those of you who aren't familiar with video gaming culture. E3 was like the premier show to be at. And E3 has since, in the last year or so, has been canceled permanently. I think right around just before the pandemic really took hold, E3 was already struggling to get people to come to the doors. I think they had lost their way from promoting games and actually supporting game culture to being more of a trade show and more business oriented than fan oriented. And that approach kind of killed a lot of the enjoyment for it. Shows like Gamescom, the PAX shows, PAX East, PAX West, PAX Australia, those other kinds of gaming shows have managed to stay a little bit more active and a little bit more limber because they do focus more on the fan experience than they do about turning it into a marketing proposition for shareholders or something, which I think is what E3 had quickly started to become. It was more of a media event and more of a shareholder event than it was centered on the people who make games a thing, which is the fans. You can make all the video games you want, but if nobody plays them, guess what? You're not making dollar one. So yeah, watching some of the footage out of Gamescom was pretty cool. And the cool thing was that I started seeing stuff coming out of Nintendo. And Nintendo, especially with the Switch, if you're going to capitalize on tragedy without meaning to capitalize on tragedy, the Switch was a perfect release. Because right after it had come out, I mean, it was still pretty popular, but its sales weren't super, super, you know, impressive, I guess, by any metric you could think of. But right around the pandemic, when people started having to work from home, you know, started having to, you know, be locked up inside, quarantined and whatnot. And then the people who were traveling were, you know, you're kind of having to spend hours at a time in certain places. Maybe you did travel someplace for business and you had to quarantine for X amount of days. I think the Switch really took off then. And now, I mean, there's so much stuff popping off of that. I'm just going to list a couple of titles and you can check these out on your own. If I find the link to the Nintendo Direct, I'll pull that up too. But they had that's what they call them, a Nintendo Direct. It's a video presentation that you can watch online on YouTube. And they announced a bunch of cool stuff that was coming down. And I've just picked out some of my personal favorites that I thought were interesting or that I'm really excited about seeing. The Capcom Fighting Collection number 2 is coming, which I'm really excited about because it has one of the games that I love for the longest time back on the PlayStation, which is called Rival Schools or Project Justice by its Japanese name. But there's like 8 new fighting, well, not new, 8 classic Capcom fighting games and crossover games that are being pushed into this fighting collection. The first one's already out, and I believe it's, at the time of last look, it was $20 to pick it up, either physical or digital, which I'm going to assume this Capcom fighting collection would probably be around that same price point. But that's on its way, and that looks really cool because, again, it's just like a walk down memory lane. There's another one called Neva by the makers of GRI, which is a Spanish game. It's a Spanish studio that's behind it. And it's very, oh man, how do I put this? It's got a minimalist kind of painterly aesthetic to their overall game design. And it's not necessarily a high action game. It's more of a puzzler slash platformer kind of approach that they've taken to unfolding a narrative. It's a very fun style if you can get yourself into it, and you know, especially if you can manage the platforming events, because some of the platforming can actually be pretty precise and a little painful. But if you get a chance to play something like this, you might actually really enjoy it, especially for the storytelling. There's a couple different games that I've played over the years that are in this similar vein. Far Lone Sales is one of the ones that comes to mind instantly. there's another one that I've played recently. I said recently because I was scrolling through a list of games and it just came to mind, but I haven't played this recently. However, I do love it. It's called Never Alone, and it's based off of native folklore from the Inupiat people of northern Alaska. And it's a beautiful game. It's absolutely wonderfully crafted. And if you ever have a chance to play it, it's the kind of game that it's, while the platforming can be a little difficult, it's the kind of game that's so well constructed and the narrative is so beautiful that I think everyone should play it at least once. And especially children, it's absolutely wonderful. The native language and the illustrations and the art style, it's faithfully recreated because it's created by the people who live this life. This is their culture. This is their heritage. So it's beautiful to see. And Neva looks to be something in a similar vein. The studios are out of Barcelona, and like I said, you get to take a look at it. It's wonderful. I think you'll really dig the presentation. If nothing else, you'll love the way that it looks. If you like the way it plays, great. We've made another fan. I'm looking forward to trying it myself. Coffee Talk was another game that I've played on stream, and I think the one that I had was Hibiscus and Lavender, I think it was. It's hard to remember, but Coffee Talk has news. They are producing a game, a third iteration of the series called Coffee Talk Tokyo. That should be coming sometime, I think they said, in 2025. Sea of Stars, which I know at least one listener of this podcast is a huge fan of, has a free DLC, it looks like, coming called Throes of the Wishmaker. Sea of Stars is a 32-bit style role-playing, like action role-playing game. Really, really cool. Morsels was a very unusual one, and I can't exactly tell what this game is. It's just weird enough that I want to try it. You can collect certain, I guess, personas that you can take on, but they're all like little animal forms, like bizarre little weird animal monster forms, and you can transform into them to complete objectives, you know, clear puzzles and things like that. Metal Slug Tactics, for those of you who are familiar with Metal Slug, the games of old from the SNK family, is like a side-scrolling action shooter. They had recently had a tower defense game, which I tried playing and just could not sink my teeth into at all. I think it's just the side-scrolling shooter formula works best, but Tactics functions like a lot of the other tactical-based games, mapped out on a grid, units move certain amounts of, you know, spaces. Like, basically, it's like playing, you know, multi-level chess. And they attack and, you know, wear down the enemy and achieve objectives, that kind of thing. It looks good, looks fun, classic art style. I'm excited for that one. Atelier Yumiya, Alchemist of Memories, and The Envisioned Land. I have no idea what this game is. I've heard of the Atelier series, but I've never played one. But it looks amazing. It looks really incredibly slick, and I like that. That makes me happy. So I'm definitely down to check that out. Tales of Graces F Remastered, another game from the Tales franchise from, I think it's Kemco or Namco. No, it's Bandai Namco. The long list of these Tales games that go back for decades. And now I played a couple of the Tales games myself. Tales of Symphonia, Tales of Vesperia, and most recently, there's one that's on the Xbox that I played, Tales of Arise, and that one didn't really capture my imagination. But most of the Tales games, with their kind of cartoony art style, juxtaposed with serious themes about political intrigue, betrayal, the nature of the spirit. It's really great narratives that are woven through these games, so I would say give that one a look. Tales of the Shire, a Lord of the Rings game, is actually kind of something more akin to a Stardew Valley or an Animal Crossing, just like a cozy, chill game where you build a community, you know, you hunt, you fish, you farm, and then you trade with the merchants and, you know, decorate your home. It just seems like a kind of chill kind of vibe to walk through the Shire itself, instead of like the super action-packed games that you usually get from the Lord of the Rings franchise. This has a much more calm and relaxed vibe, and I'm really excited for this one too. And the last one that I saw from Nintendo was Rune Factory Guardians of Azuma, another game that's part of a storied franchise that I was not very well familiar with, but the art style looks impressive, the combat looks like it's really fun, and I'm always thrilled to check out something that's new that I'm not familiar with, especially when it looks good, sounds good, and has a good story. And then I didn't catch much of the PlayStation presentation. They were kind of hush hush, it seems like. But Xbox had their presentation at Gamescom, and a lot of it is just kind of a retread of stuff that we've already known was coming, so nothing really super new. There were a couple of interesting things that popped, but like some of these announcements are just old, and they're just kind of reminding us that they're there. And I have a gripe with this. One of the first things that I saw was Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, which looks fantastic. It has like a very similar kind of feel to maybe the Uncharted series of games, except it's in first person. But you're going to play as the titular character, Indiana Jones. The motion capture looks incredible. The facial reconstruction and the voice reconstruction, which I believe was done in part with old audio files of Harrison Ford's voice playing Indiana Jones. So you'll catch a lot of his mannerisms and, you know, accents and parts of speech that he uses as a character. And it sounds incredible. I'm not going to lie. This might be one of the few times where I think AI is actually a good thing, because it's able to compile the work of an actor who would have been probably amazing at this if video games were at this level back in the, you know, back 40 years ago. It probably would have been stellar, but, you know, you can't go back in time. So this is one way to do that. For those of you who are fans of the Diablo dungeon crawler style games, Path of Exile 2 is on its way. I have Path of Exile. I never really got into it much. I know a buddy of mine played a ton of it and has been excited for this. But again, this is kind of an old announcement. There's a new one that's coming down the pipe. There's been some hubbub about it. It's called Wuchang Fallen Feathers. It's a Souls-like game. So if you're not familiar with the Souls series, check them out. You can take a look at, if you type in Souls-like games, there'll be a list of them, and you can pick out one that you want to look at, and you'll understand why it's not for everyone, but it can definitely be an interesting genre to watch and or play, depending on how you feel about it. Games like, more recently, obviously they come from the games Demon's Souls and Dark Souls, but then it's extended out, and the genre has kind of taken on a life of its own with games like Elden Ring and Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. Wuchang seems to be one in a long list of those types of games, but there's a historical link to the game. The era in which they set the game and the way that they have crafted the story is based around an actual period in history where there was a plague that struck, and it's kind of taking a play on that story. So I was kind of interested to see more about it, although it's not the kind of game I would necessarily play. It looked really interesting. More from Xbox, Warhammer 40K, Space Marine 2. Never heard of Space Marine 1. Space Marine 2 kind of looks like a Gears of War, you know, beat up waves of monsters, get to the bad guy boss in the middle, beat up more waves of monster, get to bad guy boss at the end of level, rinse, repeat. Not really a bad thing, you know, just it's set in a different universe, and I can dig that. Forza Horizon 5, we've kind of known was on the horizon for a while, no pun intended. Starfield Shattered Space DLC is coming, and I do have a comment about this. Bethesda should kiss everyone's ass for even playing Starfield at this point, and they should be giving this DLC away for free for everybody who even played Starfield in the first place. Starfield released to mediocre reviews on Game Pass around last year, and rightfully so, because their whole system was broken. I had made the joke before by calling it No Man's Skyrim, because it's made by Bethesda Studios, who, generally speaking, puts out incredible open world games with immersive stories and, you know, great, you know, build trees for crafting characters in games like, you know, The Elder Scrolls Skyrim, Morrowind, Oblivion, also to the Fallout series of games, which are getting a second life in, you know, sales due to the wildly popular and rightfully so incredibly made television show. And they just shit the bed with Starfield. It's not fun. The one thing they got right is that the shooting feels great. It feels way more polished than any other shooter that they've ever pulled off, including Fallout 4 and Fallout New Vegas, and Fallout 76, obviously, because Fallout 76 is just barely a game in my personal estimation. Although, like, with the extra content, I may have to change that. I may have to go visit again. Anyway, Starfield owes the players. We don't owe you $30. This should be a free DLC. The only thing they're really giving is like, you know, there's like a new story tree, obviously more story that they didn't have in the original game, but easily probably could have and should have been. And then they're giving everybody essentially a mount, which is a small RV vehicle to just zip around the planets in. Because the one big complaint about most Bethesda games is that traversal is a pain in the ass. You're pretty much walking everywhere. With the exception of Skyrim, where you can capture and train mounts. But, I mean, Fallout? Walk, bitch. That was what they did, you know? And Starfield is no different. You got this giant planet that you want me to explore. You want me to walk every inch of this bitch? Nah. Nah. Even Mars has a lunar rover, dog. So, no. You can't expect me to believe that this many thousands of years into, hundreds of years into the future, they haven't figured out a way to send an ATV with me, and so they finally dropped that. Anyway, Starfield is up its ass with that, and Bethesda, you should be ashamed. Atomfall looks to be a British version of Fallout, speaking of, and while it's got a significantly different look and feel, much more vibrant color palette, but obviously set in like a British countryside, the comparisons are clear and obvious there. So hopefully that'll be really good. Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. You've played Dragon Ball games before. If you have, you've played them. You've played one. You've literally played 90% of them. This looks to be no different, except flashier, and you can create your own battle scenes. Woo. All right, whatever. Star Wars Outlaws. I'm not sure what to think about Star Wars Outlaws yet. I've seen some gameplay, and it looks like it might be kind of cool. But, you know, I haven't really been one for Star Wars games except for the aerial combat. And in my personal estimation, one of their best ones was Battlegrounds. I think I remember Battlefield. But yeah, it's by the same makers of the Battlefield games and whatnot. And that game is actually cool. Star Wars Squadrons is fun because it's fun to fly shit around in Star Wars. But most of the other games I kind of left alone. So we'll see. I'm going to wait for more on Star Wars Outlaws. Mecha Break. If you were ever a fan of giant robot anime back in the day, Mecha Break looks like it's going to scratch that itch and then some. Very Zone of the Enders meets Mobile Suit Gundam style of building with armored core crafting and customization. And then Robotech feel of flying around and being able to transform your mech in mid-air to a different variation of itself. But that offers different offensive or defensive capabilities, which looked really amazing. It's not currently out. There's no actual release date set except for 2025. And there's a beta that's pending some other quality of life and other updates. So keep your eyes out for that one if you like that kind of game. In other games, there's this one called The Casting of Frank Stone. I am not a horror game fan. I really don't like horror games at all. They terrify me. They give me nightmares. And I end up having to play maybe like 20, 30 minutes at a time and turn them off. That said, I'm a big fan of film. And this is like, it looks like it's a found footage / how do I put this? Documentary style approach to storytelling in the middle of an action-ish kind of narrative-driven story. Think of something like The Quarry. Or, there's another one. I just can't remember the name of it right now. But yes, if you've played The Quarry, The Casting of Frank Stone might be for you. Legend of a small town serial killer guy who has kind of plagued the town, or at least the memory of him has plagued the town, and then a resurgence of some sort. Another game that I'm really excited for and interested to see more about is the first Berserker, Kazan. This game has another kind of Souls-like kind of bent to it. But I'm not entirely sure that that's all there is to it. The gameplay looks very similar to a lot of the Souls-like games that I was talking about. Very hack and slash, but with certain mechanics that require you to use stamina or to charge abilities and whatnot in order to take down your enemies and to avoid from being murdered entirely by one unforgiving salvo of attacks. So we'll wait on more from them. They didn't really put out a lot this time around. There's a little bit of gameplay footage, and that was about it. Microsoft Flight Simulator, excellent as always. Looks even more incredible. And there's a couple, like there's a new vehicle that they, new aircraft that they put out that I don't remember the name of it, but it's an old German plane that really didn't gain a lot of critical success, but was like kind of like an aviation darling. And that's in the game now. It looks really cool. Little Nightmares 3, if you played 1 and 2, you're going to like that. The art style is on, I'm not going to lie to you, it's incredibly creepy, hence the name Little Nightmares. But whoever made these games definitely needs some Jesus and maybe a couple of, you know, mushrooms to like trip out and maybe elevate their consciousness. It's some of the most disturbing artwork I've seen. And it's not even like the gorier stuff that I've seen. It's just so peculiarly drawn and weird. It's like if Tim Burton took, if Tim Burton was on crack and then took a severe blow to the head, and this was like the game he would make. It's very bizarre to look at. There's another one that was on here called Eternal Strands that I only got to see a bit of. It just looked interesting to me. I'm not exactly sure if I was really feeling the entire concept. It kind of smacks of some Tears of the Kingdom with its freezing time and grabbing objects through telekinesis using powers and whatnot. I don't think it's bad. It just looks a little different. So, no, and again, some of this stuff was very, very feature light. The last one is the Pièce de Résistance, which is Fragpunk. This is a game that I'm actually really excited about. I think I mentioned Redacted 2. I may have talked about that on the stream, maybe like last podcast. But I know Fragpunk is one that I'm really excited about. I joined up for a chance to get into the closed beta that's coming soon. It's a 5v5 hero shooter. Think something along the lines of Overwatch or maybe Apex Legends, where each character has like some slightly specialized skill set or powers or abilities. And in the middle of the fight, you gain these cards that are like a cybernetic boost that you can smash the card, and then you gain the particular boost that the card applies. And those effects can stack. They can multiply up on each other. They can negate other card effects, and can switch the tide of battle depending on the cards that you pick, the cards that you utilize. It's a very interesting concept, super colorful art palette and slick design. The one thing I would say is that it's still not in full production. They're going into a closed beta phase soon, but some of the motion for the characters looked very stilted when you were watching in the multiplayer screens as they were shooting and running around and jumping and stuff. It looked very static and very stiff. But again, like I said, it's still in early, still in beta phase, so it's not out yet. But looking forward to seeing that one. Now, while I did list off a lot of stuff from Xbox, I found that their overall presentation was kind of meh. Largely because there weren't, I mean, this is one of the things that they've kind of spoiled us with over the years. There were very few trailers that were for anything that you could see on the floor. And they treated this show almost as like an afterthought to the actual live presence being there in Cologne. And so they would have developer talks and they would pull footage. And then you're like, I'm listening to developers talk about this stuff, but most of the ones that they pulled were games that I didn't give a shit about. And that's why the list is kind of bare bones and it doesn't have a lot of meat to it, because most of the games that were exciting and I wanted to see and hear more about, they kind of glossed over. Apparently there's a new Civilization game coming out, and the guy who was talking about that basically presenting for it was all about it. I kind of want to go back and watch that footage just so I can watch how amped up he was about a Civilization game, which is a 4X game where you're kind of like building, exploring. You're not doing a lot of like action-y kind of stuff. It's more like resource management and trying to craft your own town. If you're a fan of games like The Sims, you probably will enjoy something along these lines, where you're building an entire civilization. Literally, is what it's called. But he apparently had a lot of life. But everybody else seemed either way too corny or not interested enough in what they were doing. And that really put a damper on it for me. I wanted to see more excitement, but I just wasn't seeing it. Now, the one thing I was excited about from Xbox was that their adaptive controller has a new remake or new version coming out. And it also has 3D printable joysticks and other mods that you can attach to this controller. So if you know somebody who's, you know, maybe missing a limb or a finger or something like that, or has, you know, motility issues. These adaptive controllers are designed for you to plug in different widgets to them and to make gaming more accessible to people who are otherwise abled, handicapped, however you choose to say it, or handicapable. Like, I'm not trying to be disingenuous or rude. I'm not up on the all the terms. But you know what I'm trying to say. Listen to my heart. What I'm getting at is this is awesome. These adaptive controllers are the shit, and I get emotional just talking about them because anything that brings more people into gaming, I feel like is a good thing. And if you've never heard about the adaptive controller, just look up Xbox Adaptive Controller Christmas commercial, get a box of tissues, thank me in the comments later. Trust me. And their new commercial is even more impactful, and I cried through the entire thing. And I'm getting emotional just thinking about it right now because I'm remembering the looks of joy on the faces of people who enjoy video games but were not able to play them. And man, I'm just so grateful that I don't have that challenge, but I'm also so grateful that I get to see this era where those people get the chance to have the same kind of joy from gaming that I get. Like, it's a wonderful time to be alive to see that. So good on them for that. Now, we're going to switch gears from gaming here in a little bit, but there is a bang on thing for Twitch. And I want you guys to be aware of it, because if you do subscribe to my Twitch channel or anybody's Twitch channel, I would advise you, particularly if you're going to be on mobile, and I hate to say this, but I want to save you a buck and make it more worth your while, actually. It won't save you money, but it will at least keep you from feeling the sting as much. Sign up for Twitch Turbo if you use your Twitch mainly through your mobile. The reason I say that is, one, Twitch Turbo will give you unlimited access to every Twitch channel out there with no ads, which is a great deal in and of itself. Now, it does cut down on the individual subscribership for a particular channel, which is a negative, but they will still gain the ad revenue from you watching it to a certain degree anyway, which is kind of a positive. But they're changing their mobile subscription prices to $7.99 starting on the 1st of October. So if you subscribe to somebody on mobile, go to your desktop, go to your mobile device, check under your settings, check under your subscriptions, and make sure you cancel those subscriptions before they would auto-renew on the 1st. You don't want to go from, you know, $4.99, $5.99, whatever, all the way to $7.99. That's a huge jump considering the low bar to entry in the first place. In some cases, it's almost double if you're paying $4.99 for a channel. And it's weird that I can't figure out who gets $4.99 and how. But I've noticed that some channels are $4.99, some are $5.99, and now they're going up to $7.99 for mobile. It's bullshit. So if you're going to do it, either subscribe through the PC platform or get Twitch Turbo and just give Daddy Bezos your extra couple bucks and save yourself from having to pay for each individual channel. I will understand. I will not be upset with you. And I don't know, but I have heard rumors that Game Pass is going to be switching up their servicing and their pricing soon. I'm hoping that part of that announcement ends up being that they're going to reinstate the ability to buy Game Pass Ultimate the way you used to be able to buy Xbox Live Gold, where you could buy a 3-month, you'd buy 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, and you'd get a commensurate savings over that time. Right now, we're currently paying, I believe it's $15.99 per month, which is a bite, considering that just a couple years ago, we could have paid $120 for the year, which would have been a pretty good savings for our personal part, and we'd still have access to Xbox Live Gold. Now, I know that they're trying to say, well, we're letting you share your Game Pass with so-and-so and so-and-so. Yeah, but you don't make this easy. You know what I mean? You have to jump through so many hoops. We might as well be, you know, the Flying Graysons in this motherfucker, because we got to do all these backflips and shit like that just to get it to work so we can game share just in our house. But you go to Nintendo and their online membership is like, oh, cool. You want to sign up somebody for your stuff? Yeah, you can sign up to 8 people on this one account. Just give us their email address so we know it's them. And then boom, they'll be able to play all the games you've downloaded. What? And here's the other kicker. It's $80 a year. $80 a year. If we did put every person who wanted a game on our service, it would literally cost each of us $10 a year to play every digital game that anyone who, like, any of the primaries download. So myself and my wife are the primaries. Any games that we download, everybody who's in our network gets to play those games. They can download them and play them as long as they're, you know, on our network. And it, a whole year, that's a steal. So, and even for Nintendo not having a well-grounded internet infrastructure for online gaming, like, they are crushing it when it comes to doing games as a service right now. So, Xbox, you might want to take note. You're going to start watching people switch up and change to, like, a cheaper service or something. Either that or motherfucker is going to start playing a bunch of offline games. All right, so we did a little bit of that. Let's switch some gears again once more. Yeah, I know you guys probably don't remember this, but a while ago, Americans at least, sent some people up to space and going up to the space station, just kind of dropped them off and were like, have fun. So this story is tragic as fuck. Initially, these people were supposed to be up there for about 8 days. Now, the launch was already kind of plagued because one of the craft that was going up there was leaking. I think they said it was leaking helium, which was meant to cool certain components down upon reentry. And because of that, it had to kind of be jettisoned so they couldn't use the thing to come back, because they're like, what if the ship blows up when they're in it? Something along those lines. So while they were only supposed to be up there for 8 days, it has now turned into 8 months, and they are still up there at the International Space Station. And now, with some of the more issues that have been happening with the Boeing spacecraft that was supposed to go up there, I think it was called the Skyliner or something like that, it has been shit canned, basically, and they're going to have to do a bunch of reworking, and NASA's like, we can't trust Boeing. You know, the people who had doors flying off of airplanes mid-flight. Yeah, we're not going to deal with that when they're trying to send motherfuckers back from space where they could literally turn into fried fritters on the way back. And then Elon Musk, old Muskrat himself, decided to get in on the jam with SpaceX, but then their launch got scrubbed just this past, shit, I think it was yesterday. They were supposed to go up there and try to bring these folks home, and then they got scratched. So it's like, yeah, there's failure on top of failure on top of failure on top of failure, and this is one of the reasons why governmental regulation of certain things is a good thing. It's a good thing sometimes to have the government step in and intercede, because otherwise you got private profiteers who come out here and go like, well, we can do it, we can do it, we can do it. Yeah, but they're going to cut corners because they got to make money. And that's why you see it, like, doors flying off of shit, this doesn't work, leaks on stuff. Like, why is this leaking? It's going to outer fucking space, and we need this to keep this thing cool. Why is there a leak at all? And they're like, we can still launch it, even though it's kind of leaking. Like, word? I'd have been like, you going to let me out right now. I'll jump out of this shit. Like, no fucking way. So, yeah, they're still stuck up there. And since the launch has been scrubbed, SpaceX was going to try to kind of intercede, but now them not being able to launch, there's no telling when they're going to be able to come back. And I'm just really nervous and worried about these folks up there, because at this point right now, any other country could just offer to be like, hey, man, we'll go get them. And that would just really shine a light on American ineptitude in a way that would be funny to me, but would also be just desserts for, you know, America and, you know, deregulation of certain agencies, you know what I mean? Like, and letting private for-profit companies come in and start to take over these areas. You're like, yeah, I know this is not the move. This is not the look. We shouldn't be doing this. And the way that it's going right now, it seems like these people might, if another country doesn't intercede to help bring them back, they could die up there. And there's only so much they can do in terms of resources and recycling before they're like, we're gonna have to eat one of us is gonna have to eat the other one to stay alive. I mean, the real problem, I think, is, it's multiple layers on this. How do you get them? How do you get something up there safely? Because that seems to be one of the biggest problems now. How do we get something up there safely? How do we get them at the very least resupplied if we can't get them back home? And then once we do get them resupplied, how long can we allow them to stay up there before getting them back home, before the adverse effects of, you know, zero gravity start to affect them when they come back? Because that's one of the other issues that they have. Without, you know, the weight of gravity to help, you know, facilitate muscle growth and to help calcium bind to bones, And there's a couple other issues as far as like, gastrointestinal issues, blood flow issues. When people come back from extended space trips and they come back to Earth's gravity, it can mess them up real bad. So the longer they're up there, the longer those deleterious effects of zero gravity will start to take hold. And then you're just basically going to bring back somebody who's going to be turned into pudding when they hit the ground. So I don't know. It's scary shit. And I hope that they get the hell out of there because it's just not good looks for. It's not good looks for them. I really wish them the best because it's super crazy that that's even a problem right now. Yeah, super, super, super nuts. In happier news though, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are trending up in a lot of areas where Donald Trump and JD Vance are sliding off. I do like the fact that they're focusing more on policy issues coming out of the Democratic National Convention. And there's an upcoming interview by the time you hear this. It won't be already over. It's going to be Thursday, August 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on CNN, a joint interview with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And I'm looking forward to seeing that because I want to hear what they have to say as a team together when it comes to attacking some of the "you haven't talked about policy" kind of stuff that like myself and other people have been saying, mainly because I want to see them talk about policy to shut other people up, obviously, Vice President Harris still has her duties as the sitting vice president, alongside Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, and what they're working on in Congress with one another or in concert with one another, and maybe also in Congress too, who knows. So they've obviously got their agenda and those plans are still in motion. But what are Kamala's ideas on how to move forward with Tim at her side, and how do they see a path towards, course correcting some of the ways that, people feel the Biden-Harris administration has kind of fallen off and has gone a little bit awry or astray? I would be interested to hear more of that. And now that they're going to have an opportunity to speak to that, I'm even more excited because that means that some of these other people are about to be like, "Well, I guess they did have some ideas, but they're still stinky poo-poo heads." Because that's all they really got is just name calling. And it's still really funny to hear these big, tough Republican men get all butt hurt and twisted about being called weird. "Mom, you said I'm weird. Kamala hurt my feelings on the playground." Cry about it, baby. Cry about it, man, babies. It makes me laugh. I'm not gonna lie. It makes me giggle. And I think it is weird. JD Vance is running around wearing eyeliner all the time. Nobody's eyes look like that for real, dude. I have very thick, full eyelashes, and I'm telling you, mine didn't look that good when I was in my 20s, let alone this dude's almost in his 40s. Nah, kid. Nah. Miss me with that shit. That dude's wearing eyeliner for real. Are you trying to be vice president, or are you trying to run for new lead singer of My Chemical Romance? Pick. You can't have both right now, dog. You got to pick one or the other. God, he's weird. Anyway, yeah. Let's close off with a couple quick topics. One is a shout out to the homie Brian Simpson, who I don't actually know personally, but I feel like Brian Simpson and I would get along very well. Comedian Brian Simpson has a podcast that if you haven't heard, you should give it a listen. It's called BS with Brian Simpson. I was recently listening to one of his episodes, and man, he hit some zingers out of the park on this one. I love the podcast, and I went back to the very inception of the podcast and was just listening forward, trying to catch up. So it's taken me a couple of months to get a hold of, to get through most of his catalog. But I was listening to episode 88, which is entitled "There Is a Price to Pay." And he hit this one talking point that like really hit home with me. There's a young guy who wrote in and was saying that like, why do old heads always say that today's music sucks? Why can't they seem to understand that our music is this and that, and blah, blah, blah. And Brian Simpson really kind of drills down on the fact is like, I think every generation has that conflict with the generation that's coming next. You know what I mean? The success, like the previous generation has problems with the successive one. And that's kind of just time immemorial. That's the way it always is. And he's like, but he hits a stride where he goes, this generation, I think he's talking about maybe like the younger millennials and Generation Z, is the most disrespectful generation ever. And I stopped for a second. I'm like, oh shit, where's he going to go with this one? But then he drills in on the point, and he makes a very interesting point that I couldn't quite put my finger on. Why does it seem like if I address somebody who's in my age group, even somebody who's older than me, there's a certain overall, I don't know how exactly to put it. There's an overall vibe that seems to be understood and felt throughout that conversation, especially when you're talking about issues where they may be somewhat contentious, or, you know, you have to correct somebody or they have to correct you. There seems to be a certain ebb and flow to the conversation that reaches an equilibrium where both parties can actually function. And even if they don't agree at the end, they can walk away from the shit without feeling like they've been disrespected. And when he said this, I was curious about where he's going to go with it. And he made a very interesting point I'd like to put to you guys. And also, please go listen to this episode and comment over there as well, because he said this shit, not me, but I really would like to hear what y'all have to say too. He said the reason that this generation is so disrespectful and comes off as so snotty and whatnot and entitled and all this jazz is because they're used to clapback culture. You know what I mean? They can't handle criticism, so they're used to just snapping off when somebody says something about them. And the biggest point what he's making was that you aren't able to really accept criticism because you perceive it as hatred or as hate. Somebody picking on you or whatever, or being mean to you. It's like, largely when people criticize me or critique me, they're people that care about me. They're coming from a place of love. They're coming from a place where they want me to be better and to do better. So they're not trying to hurt my feelings. They're trying to let me know, hey man, this is not a good look for you. You should try doing X, Y, or Z. And I am paraphrasing to a certain degree, but this is kind of like, because I don't want to quote him verbatim on the podcast, because I want to steal his material, because it's brilliant and you should listen to him all the time. But I noticed that too, is like, he's like, when you try to either critique or even just commenting on something that somebody else has said, you don't necessarily have to be derogatory in doing so. You could be completely complimentary and understanding and trying to come from a place of, hey, I need you to do better or be better. And it's always perceived as an attack, and they get defensive. They get defensive almost immediately, and then they shut down. And if they don't defensive and shut down, they get defensive and then they snap back at you. And then they're rude and, you know, disrespectful about the shit. Or they'll yell at you and scream, I've watched this shit happen and I wish I was making it up, but I'm not. And so I'm like, yeah, that is true. That happens a lot. But I know that I've had that same kind of interaction with other people in my age group and older. And yeah, you don't have any of that. And it's very rare to find it if you do. And if you do get it, you're already at a place where you were going to get there anyway. But it doesn't usually go from 0 to 100 like that. So I was like, I was very intrigued by that, because it's a concept that I felt, but I couldn't quite put into words. Now, I don't know how accurate it is. And I'm sure that if somebody who's listening to this is Gen Z or whatever, they're probably going to disagree. But hopefully you can keep it cordial and message me over at patreon.com/WanderingOneStudios and let me know what you think. You know, comments, questions, need advice, whatever, you can hit me up over there. But yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that particular subject. And again, check out BS with Brian Simpson. The episode I'm referring to in particular is called episode 88. There's a price to pay. And it's right about the 1 hour and 6 minute mark where this conversation starts to kick off. So go and give that a listen and check him out. In the meantime, I think I need to get up out of here, because I need to grab some lunch and I got to get ready for the stream today. And yeah, it's going to be a whole action-packed Wednesday for me. Hope it's good for you guys too. Thank you again for listening, sharing, liking, subscribe, all that jazz. Please do that. Please do that. But again, seriously, most important thing, share this. Just share it with somebody. And turn it on. That's the one thing I need. Don't just share it with them. Tell them, hey, you know what you got to do? You also got to push the play button. Push the play button, turn it on, let it run in the background. Let it run 1 or 2 or 3 times. Put it on repeat. I don't care. I'm not going to know. You're not going to know. You don't have to tell me. Just let it play. Let's get some listens on these bad boys. I'm all right. I'm Link Flores. You guys have been amazing. And I will see you on the next one. Be good or be good at it. I'll catch you guys a little further on down the road. Peace.